Chapter 17. Time. The shadows unfurled in an inevitable tide, and every nerve in Ed's body thrummed as it approached. Even his automail seemed to ache with the knowledge of what was coming. Plates and bolts tightened as his muscles contracted, and his blood pressure rose. Instinct told him what was about to happen. It was like finding a bomb with only 3 seconds left on the clock. There was no time to run or scream, no time for anything but a curse of a prayer that, somehow, this was not the inevitable death it seemed. His alchemy was the first thing to fail. All the energy he had fought to draw in from around him was released, and allowed to flow through him back to its natural place. For one split second, the cool air warmed against his skin, before Carmine's attack slammed into him, bearing him ruthlessly to the ground. It was a heartbeat of incredible agony, too intense to be withstood. If he cried out, then he didn't hear it. He was too engulfed by the shrill, shrieking pain that played him like a violin. Discords of sensation clashed together, colliding towards a consuming crescendo of unspeakable torture. Unconsciousness or death, it didn't matter. As long as it took him away from this place and this pain, then he would welcome it. He could feel the warm trickle of blood weeping from his eyes and filling his mouth with its taste. He tried to spit or cough or fight, but there was nothing left. There was no strength to call on and nothing else to struggle for as, bit by bit, his body shut down. Reality slipped away. Time passed, or perhaps it did not. In the deepest, darkest silence of the sleep, it was impossible to tell. All connection with any world was lost. There was no guiding rhythm, no unconscious acknowledgement of day and night to show him the way. All he knew was that the senseless nothing became something, and one faint perception breached the shadows. Warm sunlight. It stroked his skin with a silken touch, tempting him away from oblivion. The darkness clung to him, its tenacious grasp pleading for him to stay and rest, but the wordless whispers fell on deaf ears. Wakefulness came slowly, with its hazy, unsteady knowledge that something was wrong. The sunlight, for all its heat and promise of life, did not belong in the four walls of Riders. Perhaps the roof had been blown off, but the peace was too absolute. Even when a household slept, there were comforting noises, snores, beams settling, and the steady buzz of a city that did not truly rest. Opening his eyes, Ed blinked away the crimson haze across his vision and stared up at the cerulean sky. Like a blue canvas, it stretched from one horizon to the other, uninterrupted. There were no clouds or birds, and the bronze disk of the sun scorched the land as it traveled through its steady arc. Dry air tickled his nostrils, and the faint scent of jasmine and sand lingered, drowning out the tangy memory of blood. He recognized that perfume from the place in his dreams, but it was fainter now, a whisper of fragrance on the breeze. Carefully, Ed moved his arms. He half expected the pain to return, to swamp his mind and carry him back into the night. But there was no sensation, other than an aching, biting cold. His fingers felt dead with it, and when he struggled to stand, his breath crystallized in the sweltering air. His cheeks were stiff and mask-like, and he stared at the frost that clouded his automail hand as if the desert sun were nothing but a painted picture. "What's happening?" he murmured, lips almost too bloodless to move, and his tongue clumsy in his mouth. You're dying. Ed spun around to face the voice, stumbling clumsily as his freezing muscles struggled to respond. He was in the same plaza he had been in his previous dream. But the beautiful tiles and the arrays carved across them were shattered. The fountain was stone dry, no longer sending a laughing cascade of water spilling down into its bowl. It looked more like a gravestone than a thing of beauty. Sitting on the fountain's rim was the young boy, the owner of the childlike voice that spoke in Ed's mind. His dark hair was pulled back in a ponytail, and his kohl-rimmed eyes watched Ed from hollow cheeks. Twin trails of dried blood picked out a path down his face, and a third spilled from the corner of his mouth. His features were a gruesome, unsmiling facade, and Ed knew without looking that the same marks stained his own paler skin. The white cloth the boy wore wrapped around his waist was not stained from play as it had been before. No sand or mud flawed its thick folds. This time, it glowed a pristine, angelic white. In contrast, the torque around his neck was dull, tarnished by a patina of shadows. The darkness chased over the surface of the simple gold band like storm clouds obscuring the summer sun. "You're dying," the boy repeated, his voice mournful. Ed should have felt something. On some level of thought, he knew he should have been shocked or afraid, but there was nothing. If his blood drained from his face, then he couldn't feel it. There were no shivers. There were not even any words of denial. "Then so are you," Ed whispered, his voice rasping in his throat, already lifeless. The boy nodded, dipping his toe in the sand at his feet to trace a pattern. "All is one. One is all. My life and yours are the same." Large, dark eyes were clouded by a scowl, and he looked up at Ed. When he spoke again, it was not with the wisdom of the ages, but with the petulance of a child. "This is all your fault. Why didn't you run away?" "That's not what I do." His hollow words felt meaningless here, and Ed thought of Al, and Roy, and Hughes, and everyone else he would probably never see again. He had known he was dying. It was hard to deny the doctor's grim prediction. But somehow, he had managed to keep the thought at bay. It had been something that the future held, and even if it was tomorrow that his life ended, then he still had today to live. Except that now, it seemed his time was up. He sighed heavily, scowling as his breath coiled in icy tendrils through the air. It drifted like smoke before dissipating. Another memory in a place of alien recollections. "What am I doing here, anyway?" He gestured around the dilapidated buildings, no longer a civilization, but the sad ruins of what once was. "Shouldn't I be in some kind of afterlife instead of stuck in one of your memories?" "You're dying, not dead." The boy got to his feet and crossed his arms, scowling like Alicia when denied something she wanted. "This place is safe until you choose, life or death." Ed kicked at a bit of rubble, wishing he felt something other than this dreadful indifference. The stone bounced and rolled away down the street. It sounded like dice rattling in a cup. One more gamble at the Last Chance Saloon. Fresh blood coated his tongue with its metallic taste as he licked his lips. It was strange how, even in this place, he was still bleeding and breathing. He was still living, sort of. Did that mean that back there, in the real world, time was still passing for him? Somewhere, he was fighting for his life. But right here, right now, he was just waiting for the outcome, a spectator to the game. He looked around, determined to take his mind off his helplessness. Empty, desolate streets stared back at him accusingly. This was no longer a bustling city, but a ghost town. The only things that still lived were the plants, kept alive by the remaining arrays, fighting on against the unceasing rasp of the desert wind that blew in across the dunes. "What happened here?" he asked quietly, glancing over his shoulder at the boy. "Is this what it looks like now?" There was silence for a moment, thoughtful and deep, and when the child spoke, it was in an ancient voice. Perhaps, I would not know. More than likely, there is nothing left. The desert takes everything in the end. The boy crouched down and picked up a handful of sand, watching it run through his fingers and swirl away on the wind. It was Babylon once, he shrugged. Now, it is probably nothing but a dusty grave for 1,000 memories. Babylon? Ed murmured. I know that name. Many in your time do, but that is all they know. It has become nothing more than a word that no one understands. Scraps of legend survived. Speaking of gardens that grew from the sand, of life that stemmed from clutching death. But they do not remember what became of us. We were there at sunset. By dawn, there was nothing. Ed felt something snake its way up his spine, a creeping chill of sensation, sharp after the numbness that coated his body. The thrill of horror spawned a shudder, and he felt his stiff lips move to frame another name, another place that had vanished in the space of a night. Xerxes? He murmured, wondering if the boy would recognize the word. Dark eyes gleamed for a moment, but the child shook his head. A great city that echoed our own, a beacon of civilization in the desert. But Babylon had already lain in ruin for over 1,000 years before Xerxes was anything more than a few huddled buildings around an oasis. The boy cocked his head to one side, large eyes narrowing thoughtfully as he took in the measure of Ed. It was an intense look that saw everything. Skin and automail, flesh and bone, heart and soul, all seemed to be weighed in that one glance. Abruptly, he held out his hand, and the ageless sorrow on his young face stiffened into resolve. I can show you what became of us. Perhaps, if you fight your way back to the living, you'll remember more than just a name. Perhaps you'll understand. It was an open choice, and Ed hesitated. Tempted to linger in blissful ignorance. Was it the kind of truth he was meant to know? If the past of Babylon was as lost as the boy claimed, then it could be that way for a reason. Maybe it was something that should not be remembered. Or maybe it was something they should never have forgotten. He touched the boy's palm firmly, flesh fingers curling around the smaller hand as the world seemed to waver and twist. Sound blossomed around them as the cracks in the floor sealed themselves. Flaws were wiped clean in the blink of an eye. The melody of the fountain mixed with talk and laughter as the people bustled around the market. Tanned faces smiling as merchants paraded their wares. Women were swathed in loose trails of fabric, covering bare flesh from the bite of the sun with gauzy cloth. The men were bare-chested, adorned by tattoos and jewelry that glimmered in the light. The air was heavy with the smell of spice and the ever-present perfume of jasmine. Glancing up, Ed could see the cascade of lush greenery, leaves and petals unfurled to the sun like worshippers before a god. Birds twittered in between the branches, eating bugs as butterflies danced from one flower to the next, wings beating in a horde of gemstone colors as they went. It's beginning. The boy's words made him look around in confusion, but it was his ears that sensed the change. The birds were the first to fall silent, their bright voices mute as they took to the air. Debris rained down from the buildings as a throaty roar echoed along the street, and people began to cry out in alarm. Houses collapsed as the earth shook and bucked. Around the fountain, the tiles cracked and the arrays died, choking off the water. Dust billowed up in the air, a smoke signal of distress, but there was no one to see it in the desert. Slowly, the haze cleared. Blood was spilled like wine across the sandy stone, and many people lay dead beneath the rubble. Those that lived picked themselves up, clutching at wounds as they stared around. Like the aftermath of any disaster, there was more shock than panic, more disbelief than action. A little girl was crying loudly, clutching at a rag doll as she wailed for her mother. Ed reached out, the need to comfort her automatic, but his fingers went straight through her flesh. She did not feel his presence, and he found himself wondering which one of them was a ghost in this place. Was he real, and she an illusion? Or was it the other way around? It was the first of many catastrophes, the boy continued, tugging Ed along behind him as the scene changed like flowing water. Floods turned the sand to mud, and unnatural fires scorched it to glass. The air became an animal, always howling and ripping into our city. It was as if the elements were out of control. Somewhere, some important balance had been tipped, and we were suffering the consequences. Men of great wisdom worked day and night for a solution, but there was little luck. Around them, the narrow streets widened out, and a towering building spurred upwards into the sky. It was a cluster of square shapes, each built on top of the other. Finally, amidst a forest of terracotta roofs, Ed could make out a literal jungle of plants. Entire trees had rooted themselves into the stonework. They thrived, as if it were earth that nurtured them rather than this man-made place. "The palace," the boy said, leading them across a bridge. "This is the day it ended. A man called Thakir, a priest, felt he had the answer. We owed him everything. Throughout his life, it was he and his knowledge that made the city great. Without him, there would have been no plants and barely enough water for the people to survive. He gave this place life through the art that you now call alchemy, and so we trusted his word. Or at least, most of us did." The palace sped by, the towering doorway no more than a flickering shadow overhead as the twisting corridors unwound, shaking along faster than a man could run. Finally, Ed was left standing in the doorway to what looked like the main chambers. A man in long black robes stood in the middle of the floor, listening with condescending patience to the woman before him. "It's nothing but lies," Carmine spat, her gray eyes bright with fury. "You'll kill my son to save the people, and when he's gone, you'll take his place on the throne. You don't need his blood for this. Anyone will do." The priest smiled calmly, slender fingers wrapping around Carmine's arm as he forced her toward the window. "Look out there, Your Highness, and you'll see a city who knows what to expect of King Kaleo. It's his duty to sacrifice himself for them. It is his place as their god and their ruler." The priest's face turned cold and bitter, dark eyes flat with disdain. "After all, what else is the bastard child of a whoring princess good for?" "How dare you!" Carmine wrenched herself away, straightening her spine as she glared at the man. "He is your king!" "He is my sacrifice," the priest said coldly. "The blood in his veins is royal, regardless of his father's origins, and with it I can construct a gateway to control the flow of energy into our world. The disasters will stop. The elements will calm, and you will rule us all, you and your witchcraft." Carmine strode across the floor, her hand lashing out to strike at him. The slap rang around the room, and Ed watched the priest close his eyes as if praying for patience. "The decision has been made. Prepare his majesty. The ceremony will take place at dusk." He turned and stalked towards the door, his body showing no sign of his age. From here, Ed could see what Carmine could not. The expression on the man's face was sickeningly triumphant. Unconsciously, Thakir twisted a ring on his finger as he walked, his smile one of intense self-satisfaction. "Mother was right," the boy, Kaleo, said. Thakir was the only man who understood and practiced alchemy. One array, one transmutation, these things would have little effect on the natural order of things. But a lifetime of it? A city constructed almost solely on the power of alchemy? It was Thakir that tipped the balance, that brought all this down upon us. He was correct to say that the gate would stop the disasters, but it would also be a source of fuel for his power. Many people already viewed him as a sage. If he succeeded in his plans, he would become as great as any god we knew. Kaleo glanced up at Ed. "We ran," he stated flatly, as if daring Ed to judge a child for his cowardice. "Within an hour, we were fleeing the city. But Thakir was prepared. He had my mother put in chains and branded a traitor. As for me," he shrugged, and with a wave of his hand, they were in a large square. It was filled with people, but the crowd parted in front of them like crops bowing before the wind. No one looked their way. Every eye was focused on the dais at the front and the man who stood talking in reverent tones. "They killed you," Ed said quietly, his gaze held by the sharp, silver knife in Thakir's palm. It flashed and flickered in his hand as he gestured, emphasizing his words. Yet his audience were not captivated. Ed could see their unease. Men shared glances, tangled in guilt and uncertainty, as women wept over the boy king who lay so still on the dais, awaiting his doom. At his side, Carmine was in chains. She did not struggle or fight. Instead, she stared at the priest. Her face was a masterpiece of unspeakable rage. A dark, burly man moved like a shadow behind her, bending near and murmuring something in her ear. He did something behind her back, but Ed couldn't see what it was. "My father," Ed murmured. "He was chief of the guard. He knew he could never be king, but that did not stop him from loving the both of us. He was always there, even then, even when he was helpless to stop what was happening to me." Kaleo's face twisted in disgust, and his dark eyes grew bright with tears. For a moment, he was a child again, drugged and afraid on that slab of stone. "Thakir was my voice, and his orders were clear. I was to die, and Mother would watch. All Father could do was free her from her restraints." Thakir had finally stopped speaking, putting his glorious words into action. His eyes were glazed with something, though whether it was a drug or just the adrenaline, Ed didn't know. In one quick strike, the king's throat was cut, and crimson blood splashed down the dais, pooling on the ground. Carmine leapt, just a split second too late, colliding with Thakir after the deed had been done. Ed expected her to wail or cry. Instead, she screamed, a hoarse sound of bitter fury as she lunged for the knife. Her fingers closed around the blade as the array carved into the floor began to glow. Light seeped out, filling each line like the water this city cherished so much. It extended beyond the dais and into the crowd, unfurling under people's feet as the night air became heavy with the tang of alchemy. With a hiss, Carmine lashed out, snarling as the priest gave a scream of pain. The knife had sliced through his outstretched fingers, severing the digits like a hot blade slipping through butter. The ring that had been on his finger fell to the floor and rested against Carmine's bare foot. She lunged again, blind to anything but the man in front of her and the need to destroy him as utterly as he had destroyed her. Ed doubted that she noticed when she trod on the ring. That minor discomfort was beyond her. Even as the alchemy reached its torturous peak, she saw nothing but rage. The array flared, active at last, and Ed looked around as one gasp issued from a thousand mouths. As one being, men, women, and children fell to the floor, their lives snuffed out like candle flames. It was chilling to see, and Ed grimaced in horror as he realized that the guards were just the same. They were a crumpled pile of armor on the ground, lifeless. Carmine held the priest's sagging body in her grasp, her fingers twisted in his robes as she shook him, shouting unintelligibly as the air around her tore itself to shreds, opening in a gaping mouth to another plane. The priest still lived, although barely. His face was parchment pale, and his eyes, bright with both horror and awe, were fixed on what was happening in that other place. The roar of stone breaking away was a deafening thing, as all over the city chunks of buildings pulled themselves apart and were dragged into the array. They crumbled to dust, sucked into the portal by the ravenous gale. Once on the other side, they began to form new shapes. Tall, sturdy pillars appeared out of nowhere, building themselves up and spreading out to form a familiar square arch. Smooth stone rippled, taking on the twisted, sculpted appearance of the gate that Ed knew so well. The huge lintel towered over everything, dwarfing them with its presence, as Kaleo gently tugged at Ed's hand, pulling him closer to the threshold. "Don't be afraid. You need to see, or you will not understand." Ed opened his mouth to snap a retort, but the boy just looked at him, seeing every facet of his uncertainty as plainly as if it were written on his face. Walking past the oblivious Carmine, they stepped into the other plane. It was a violent, vicious place, raw and untamed. Matter spun from nothing, materializing and vanishing again as the unharnessed energy seethed, earthing itself through invisible cracks on the uncertain horizons. With an almighty bang, the doors flew into being, the stone parting to make way for the hinges as the wooden panels fitted neatly into place. The massive eye appeared in a blaze of crackling power, and strange shapes on the grain of the wood began to shift and change. With a great creaking of stone and timber, the thing settled, solidifying into an even more certain shape. The rock stopped moving, fully formed now into the sculpted edifice that sent shivers down Ed's spine. "This place connects so many worlds. Where the balance of energy has shifted and become unstable, cracks form. The energy that built up here found its way out through those cracks into those other realms." Kaleo looked up at the door, stepping back as they slowly parted, and the humming, jagged air gradually calmed. Thakir's idea was sound, for a while. The gate was both a storage device and a conduit. Energy could be balanced between the worlds which suffered. It could be taken from one place and put in another. But it went wrong. "It was built wrong," Kaleo corrected him. "With this creation, Thakir made alchemy as you know it today possible. Several times the art has almost been lost, but someone, somewhere, has always brought it back to life. Yet, from the very beginning, the gate has been failing, falling apart on a vicious foundation of human life." As Ed watched, a flare of light glimmered into being, hovering in the darkness of the gate's open maw. It floated there, nothing more than a speck of dust. Suddenly, a gust of wind rushed inward, sending Ed's hair flying around his face. On the edge of hearing were faint wails and whispers, curses and prayers that faded as they vanished into the darkness, swirling around the light until it flashed, a burning nova of brightness that spread outwards, filling every sense with its presence. And in the very middle of that opalescent shine were a pair of dark eyes looking out, a child without its mother. "My blood activated the array and began the process. Mine was the first life sacrificed to the gate. It used me as a core to build upon, a foundation to make it whole. Everyone else, the thousands of others that Thakir gave to his alchemy, they were just power, the first jolt of energy to bring his creation into being."
"What happened to them?" Ed asked.
"They passed through. Perhaps they went to other places, or their energy made new lives while their spirits were stored in some version of paradise."
Kaleo shook his head, unsure.
"None of them stayed with me. I felt them all go, even the priest. I felt my city die."
The gate was gone. The silver plane vanished from sight as the air closed up around them, sealing itself away from the world. They stood on the dead array, the lines scoring deep gouges into the stone beneath their feet as the oppressive silence of the city closed in around them. Every window was dark and every street deserted. Not even bodies remained. The gate had taken everything. Thakir had offered so much and, in the end, it had demanded the full price, even from him. One figure remained in the empty square, her slim figure trembling with soundless sobs as she hid her face in her hands. Her hair fell in a thick, unruly swath, blocking her from sight as her body slowly curled in on itself, collapsing weakly to the ground. Overhead, the moon dipped toward the horizon, and the stars wheeled slowly. Carmine's tears must have stopped at some point, leaving nothing but an empty shell of a being in this desolate place. As the sun rose over the horizon, she got to her feet, not bothering to shake the dust from her bloody gown as she staggered away. Something chimed against her foot, flashing gold as it skipped away. For a moment, she hesitated, as though debating whether to simply walk on. But eventually she moved towards where the plain band rested, winking innocently in the light. She bent over, stiff and sore, to retrieve it from the dust, clutching it in her tightly clenched fist as though she wished she could crush it. "It saved her, that ring," Kaleo murmured, tugging on Ed's hand and leading him away through the streets. "Thakir made it for himself, something to tell the Array that he was not to be taken. When she cut it from his hand, he lost his anchor to this world, and she gained a new one." "She still wears it, doesn't she?" Ed asked, thinking of the gold ring that Carmine used to control her thugs. Something to remind her of why she's doing what she does. The pressure on his hand faded, and Ed frowned, realizing that he was holding on to nothing but thin air. The streets had changed, morphing in that dreamlike way until he stood back at the dead fountain, staring at this desolate place as if he had never moved. For the first time since he had opened his eyes here, panic clutched at him, making his chest feel tight and pained. "Hey, where are you?" he shouted, listening to his voice echo back at him. "Come back!" There was no reply, and Ed swore viciously as he glared around, wondering if he should go and look for the boy. All he had seen was crowding in his mind, a plethora of images that was almost unbelievable. Questions seethed like lava, scorching his tongue with their need to be voiced. How was Carmine still alive after millennia? Had she really destroyed the gate? And if so, would the same disasters that tore Babylon apart start affecting Amstrus again? Why had the boy shown him all this? What was the point? A fluttering shadow danced across the ground, and Ed looked up, staring at the sapphire butterfly that danced towards him. Its erratic path took it to a flower where it perched, wings spread, as around it the scraggly plants grew more lush. A choking gurgle, dry and rasping, emanated from the fountain, and Ed turned to watch as cool water, crystal clear, spilled from its lip to the bowl beneath. The arrays on the floor were still cracked and useless, but water flowed. Life was returning, in face of all the odds. "What's happening?" he asked, for the first time really feeling the chill in his skin. It ate at his bones with sharp, gnawing teeth, and he began to shiver fitfully, wrapping his arms around himself in a futile effort to find some warmth. Kaleo's voice was a soft whisper in Ed's mind, no longer separate from him. "You've made your choice." Cold. It was the sensation that overrode everything else. His whole body was twisted with it, as if he'd been dropped in ice water and left there. Heavy blankets were on top of him, their fabric warm and dense, but they did not stop the violent shivers that shook his breath from his lungs. Something was moving gently up and down his back, and he dimly realized that there was a large source of heat next to him. Instinctively, he shuffled closer, ignoring the grunt of surprise as he buried his nose in the curve of someone's neck and pressed himself against their bare chest. "Ed, are you awake?" Roy's voice was little more than a whisper, and the hand stroking his back paused as he managed a very hoarse grunt of response. "Say something," he suggested, and even though Ed's brain was sluggish, he did not miss the faint edge of panic in Roy's words. "I'm freezing," he growled through gritted teeth, wincing at the rough soreness in his voice and the lingering taste of blood. "You were hypothermic," Roy said quietly, as he resumed the soft, gentle strokes, spreading little flickers of heat wherever he touched. "Something in the alchemy you did drained everything away. It almost killed you."
"It did kill you."
Ed groaned at the whispered words in his mind and shuffled deeper under the blankets, torn between pressing himself as close as possible to the body next to him and curling himself up into a ball. Eventually, he settled for the former, letting his eyes drift shut again as Roy's heartbeat thumped steadily beneath his palm. His brain felt stupid and confused. Every thought was sluggish and lazy, with no sense of urgency at all. Memories moved through his mind like shattered ice, fragments that never seemed to form the whole picture. He tried to grasp at something from the mess, something important, but it evaded the clutches of his foggy concentration. Worry was a faint thing, a trickling touch that he could not bring himself to care about. The only thing of importance was Roy next to him, slowly tempting life back into his numb flesh. Gradually, the chill began to seep away, loosening its hold on his bones. Muscles twisted with cramps as more blood left his core and flowed back into his limbs. The shivers accelerated and then abated entirely, doing their part to raise his temperature back towards normal. He still felt chilled, but the numbness had receded, to leave the sharp sting of an abused body and a dull, hollow ache in his chest. Slow, frosty thoughts gathered speed, coming together piece by piece. A fraction of memory kicked into life, and Ed stiffly propped himself up on his elbows, looking blearily at Roy's tired face. Stubble shadowed his jaw, and his eyes were bloodshot, half-closed with exhaustion. Ignoring the crawl of goose flesh across his bare chest, Ed glared down at the older man. "You all right?" he croaked, frowning when Roy reached out and tugged him back down to the mattress. "Just tired and bruised." He twitched the blankets back up over their shoulders before brushing Ed's hair from his face. It was a gentle caress, more one of a lover than a friend, and for a moment Ed let himself relax into that brief touch. Feather light, Roy's fingertips trailed across the edge of the array, and Ed felt him tense, as though he knew what was coming. A minuscule jolt of power flashed through Ed's body, finitely controlled but still wild and dangerous. It was like pure heat, and the familiar, passionate flame of Roy's alchemy sang along every nerve. Ed jerked away, scowling fiercely as he realized what had been happening. "Stop it!" he snarled, shuffling away as he saw the truth behind Mustang's exhaustion. "How many times have you done that?" Roy did not answer, swallowing painfully as he relaxed back into the pillow, too drained to even hold up his head. "You were controlling it. Or something was. It doesn't take more than it needs anymore."
"What it needs looks like more than you can fucking spare."
Ed's shout was almost mute, a cracked whisper from his abused throat when it should have been a yell. He was shaking again, but it wasn't from the cold. His mind was absorbed with the horror of what could have happened, of how much he could have lost without even knowing it. "I had to." The words were quiet and fierce, half spat. "You killed yourself, Edward, with that fucking alchemy. Whether Carmine had lashed out or not, you would have still ended up dead, wouldn't you?" Silence stretched between them, long and uncomfortable. Ed's mind had gone blank, too shocked to register the fact that Roy had cursed. The hurt in his words was stark and naked, bare for anyone to see. He was too exhausted for guile or manipulation, stripped of everything but the painful truth. It was easy to see his confusion, and Ed felt almost embarrassed by the frank honesty in his glare. Roy shut his eyes, hunching his shoulders in weary defeat as he drew his knees up towards his chest and muttered, "Forget it." His dark brows were drawn into a frown, and anger pinched his face. Ed could see his jaw working, as though he had so much more he wanted to say but was holding it all back. In the grate, one of the logs crumbled, sending a belch of sparks up the chimney. The hungry crackle of the fire only served to define the peace, barely interrupted by their harsh, irregular breathing. Neither of them slept. Even though Roy's eyes were shut tight against the world, he was still awake, his body tense and distrustful. The space between them felt immense,
Even though Ed knew he could reach out and brush Roy's arm with his fingertips, it was not a physical distance, but an emotional one. And Ed gritted his teeth against the urge to shift closer. His automail fist clenched, his fingers tangling in the pillowcase uselessly as he tried to think of something to say that wasn't an apology. "It wasn't like that," he muttered, picking absently at the blankets. Roy looked up. Ed heard him move his head, but he couldn't bring himself to look into his face. "I didn't think..." He stumbled over his words as he tried to explain what had gone through his head. "I didn't know that the alchemy would kill me. I just knew it wouldn't kill anyone else." He had Roy's full attention now. He could feel the cautious, judging weight of his gaze. Did he really think that Ed was so untrustworthy? Did he think he would lie about something like that? Ed felt a surge of anger and clenched his teeth against it, dragging his eyes up to look into Roy's face. Mustang stayed quiet, waiting for him to explain. And Ed found him talking, just to fill up the dead weight of the silence. "It's not hard to be like her, like Carmine. When we got downstairs, I walked away from you because I had to. I was so fucking tired, and all I could feel was you and Sal and the others." He swallowed uncomfortably, looking away from Roy so he wouldn't have to see the disgust he knew would find its way onto his face. "Human energy is the strongest and easiest to use. I think that's why, before, I was draining people without even realizing it. Maybe I didn't kill anyone, but you're right. It makes me just as bad as Carmine. When she turned up here and I had nothing to fight with..." Ed trailed off, the memories of that sudden need making him feel sick. In that desperate second, every life around him had been like a beacon, a flare of energy there for the taking. It was as if his body had been parched for that power, and he had come so very close to just reaching out and taking it. But it would have killed them. Just like Carmine, he could have drawn out every last grain of life they had until there was nothing left. Until they were just bodies, soulless and unresponsive on the ground. In all his time as an alchemist, he had never thought of people as something to be used until that moment. A hand touched his, a gentle tap to bring him back to the present. Without thinking, he looked up into Roy's face, and felt a faint thrill of relief when he saw nothing other than curiosity and concern. "What did you use instead?" It was a cautious question, as though Roy didn't want to frighten him back into silence. "The air, the ground, wherever else I could get it from." "It went cold," Roy said, realization dawning on his face. "You used the heat in the air." "Better than killing people, but it's harder," Ed muttered. "If you drain someone of energy and they die, then they have no use for it. You don't have to give it back later. Air doesn't die, and neither does the earth. Whatever you take and use, you have to return." He remembered the hollow, draining feeling before Carmine's attack had hit him. Cool air had warmed while he had turned to ice at his core. "I took more than I was meant to, more than I could repay." He sighed, burying his nose in the blankets again so that his next words would be muffled. "Just because the gate's gone doesn't mean I can ignore equivalent exchange." "But she can. Carmine doesn't seem to pay anything for the alchemy she uses," Roy pointed out, rubbing a hand over his face as he tried to get his head around what Ed was saying. "I don't understand." Ed groaned quietly, wishing that his mind were sharper. In that moment of decision, the theory had made perfect sense, but now it had returned to a tangled puzzle that he couldn't understand. He was used to alchemy being a skill, something he could understand and control. Now it was this strange, ethereal thing, more about hope than ability. The energy for alchemy used to come from the gate, but before it was built, it was still possible. Now the gate's gone, everything's working differently. You can use your own energy if you've got enough, or take it from somewhere else in the world, of Amstress. He scowled unseeingly at the sheets, picking his way slowly through the tangle of ideas in his head. Carmine kills people, taking everything they have until there's nothing left, because she's human, because she's compatible with the power she's trying to use, then it's easier to do. She kills the rightful owner of that energy, and it doesn't try and flow back to them. There's nowhere for it to go but her. Ed closed his eyes again, knowing that his scrambled words made no sense. If she didn't kill, if she just took little bits of energy from people, then she'd still have to pay it back, right? Roy asked hesitantly, like a student trying to understand a complex concept. Ed nodded, closing his eyes as he let his tired mind drift. Human energy isn't something generic, like heat. Everyone is unique. If you just take part of it, then it tries to flow back to them. If you use it, then you owe it. That's what was happening at the station, when everyone was feeling awake and then exhausted. It was me taking some of their energy and then flowing it back. I couldn't do that here. It wasn't enough. If I'd taken what I needed, there would only be me and Carmine left now. Roy touched his chin, tipping Ed's head back so he could look into his eyes. He hesitated, as if he was unsure of just how much he could ask. The other day, when I asked if something had found a place for itself in you the same way that something was in Carmine, you wouldn't give me an answer. Can you tell me now? His thumb stroked softly along Ed's jaw, hovering over the steady hammer of his pulse as if reassured by its rhythm. It wasn't an order or a demand, and Ed hesitated, faced once again by simple, unadorned honesty. Roy was not trying to trick him or manipulate him. There was no raised shield of indifference or a mask of apathy. And he faltered, suddenly less certain if he was doing the right thing. His instinct was still to evade the question, to keep something away from this man who was steadily tearing down every one of his defenses. Once he had loathed the arrogant soldier who stood behind that vast expanse of desk and kept pushing him to go further and try harder. But now? Hate had nothing to do with it anymore. Finally, Ed made up his mind, licking dry lips before he spoke. When the gate fell apart, most of what was inside was just shadows. It took Carmine, made her into something less than human and more like itself. All that was left after that was a fraction of light. One more life would have given her the power to kill it completely, but it hid in me at the last minute and pushed me back into Amstress. Roy closed his eyes for a moment, nodding as if things were slowly beginning to make sense. The blankets shifted, whispering soft secrets as he moved. A thoughtful frown curved his brow, and Ed knew that a thought he would rather ignore had just occurred to him. You barely used any alchemy the day the station exploded. What were you using for energy back then? A denial was ready on Ed's tongue. He had used alchemy. He must have done. He wouldn't take energy from people unless he needed it. But the sluggish mire of his memory stirred. They had been clearing rubble with shovels and brute force. Alchemy had not had a place amidst the ruins, but he still unconsciously had been taking whatever he could find. I don't know, Ed replied, lifting his shoulders in a useless shrug. I didn't even realize I was doing it until you told me. Roy stretched out an arm, eyes lidded as he struggled to stay awake. Ed felt the anger begin to rise again as he watched the man force himself to ignore his needs. Roy had given him too much, and it didn't matter that the energy would ebb back to him eventually. Right now he needed to sleep, and instead he was forcing himself to ask questions. Did he think he'd never get this opportunity again? It's not something benign, is it? Roy mumbled, almost too tired to speak properly. If what you're carrying is the other half of what's taken over Carmine, then it's got power of its own. It needs energy just as much as you do. He smothered a yawn, swiftly losing the battle of mind over matter as exhaustion pulled at him. Go to sleep, bastard, Ed murmured softly, before you get ill. He expected an argument or another litany of questions, and he felt a trickle of unease as all he got was peaceful obedience. Roy shifted closer and nestled under the covers, the tension in his body fading away. His hand skimmed gently down Ed's arm and settled at his waist,
cupping his hip possessively over his leather trousers and pulling him nearer. Ed's pulse skipped as a shiver that had nothing to do with the chill swept through him. Roy's thumb was sleepily tracing along his waistband, and Ed wondered if he even realized what he was doing to him. There was something artless and innocent about Roy when he was like this, and Ed hesitated a moment before slipping his flesh arm around his waist and relaxing against the warm sprawl of his body. It was just another stolen moment. He knew that, even as he hated the truth of it. The morning would bring reality with its light, and once again he'd be held at arm's length, too much of a risk to take. He closed his eyes tight, burying his face in Roy's neck and trying to silence the thoughts that swirled like snowflakes in his mind, shaken up by Roy's touch. The questions could wait until tomorrow, until his mind was clear and alert again. For now, he had this moment, and, even as he tried to tell himself that the present was all he needed, he knew that it would never be enough. He wanted a future, and that was the one thing he didn't have.